This episode of the Glass Half Empty podcast is brought to you by Kingsford. Another MLB season is in the books, but there's no off-season when it comes to grilling. Keep Kingsford lit and stay stoked.
Rogers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win!
Welcome to the Glass Half Empty podcast on the Big Lead. I'm Ryan Glassmiga. We are joined for what I believe is the fifth time by Rob Stone from Fox Sports. Rob, how's it going?
Do I get like a special blazer for this? Like Saturday Night Live, when you host it so many times, you get to go in the VIP lounge, a red blazer, velvet.
You're Alec Baldwin and Steve Martin all rolled into one.
Oh, nice. I'll take that minus the fights over parking spaces.
Oh, come on. You'd fight over a parking space.
No, I'm not that petty. I'll fight over a lot of things, apparently, but not a parking space.
So Rob, of course, is a host for Fox Sports Soccer, college football, and college basketball, and soon to be, again, professional bowling. He will be hosting the studio for the MLS Cup this Saturday. Fox Sports is broadcasting that. It's going to be Atlanta United FC hosting the Portland Timbers at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Coverage begins at 7:30 Eastern. So, Rob, I read a story a couple days ago, independently of even preparing for this, that the secondary market prices for this game are just absolutely through the roof. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution said that the average resale price is just under $300. How did we get to a point where an MLS game is drawing that type of interest in a 50,000-person stadium?
Well, it's more than 50,000 because they've already jammed more than 70,000 in there for MLS games. And I think Saturday night, one of the big talking points is clearly going to be they will break a new single game MLS attendance record with this. And it's in a pocket of America that, frankly, a lot of people didn't think soccer would succeed. I'm from the South. I lived and worked in Georgia, and I did not forecast that Atlanta would become the market that it has in soccer. And I think it tells you a lot of things. Number one, there's a lot of people out there who really don't know what the soccer markets are out there. Number two, it was clearly undervalued as a sports-hungry market, even though it's got a reputation as being difficult to get that consumer constantly to take in the sport in Atlanta. And finally, I think it just goes to give you just another example of how far soccer has come, how much growth is still there, and why so many people want to become investors in soccer, whether it's domestically or internationally. But you're seeing more and more American interest in this sport from people who are decision makers, from people who have deep wallets, and then the people like you and I who just enjoy the game and are happy that whenever we turn on a television these days, odds are we're able to find a game, whether it's live or on replay.
Right. I think if we had this conversation a couple years ago, we would have been, not you or I, but people would have said, okay, so it's big in the Pacific Northwest. But right now, it's, as you said, to your point, it's expanded into the Southeast. There's excitement for it in Kansas City, Minnesota, Toronto. It's interesting, though, because I live in Chicago, and that's one of the markets where I don't think it's as huge and as fervent as some of these other ones.
And it used to be. And the team that's there, the Chicago Fire, is more than well aware of it. They got caught in the stadium move that overtook a portion of Major League Soccer, a good couple decades ago, where they said, we got to get out of the city. We got to build our own stadium. We got to get to the kids. We got to get to the fan base. And they and a couple other clubs, will tell you that I think they misplayed their hand a little bit. And the drive now is to get back into the city. Chicago is a lost market right now. I think Boston is another. and the opportunity for those two markets to explode for Major League Soccer is well known, and it has been known for a long time. And I think there's a lot of entities behind the scenes trying to make that happen. But again, it goes to your point that this is a real growth sport out there. You know, I think the NBA is growing right now, but I think there's a lot of other sports out there that have plateaued for a while. And a lot of smart people will look at the ledgers and look at what soccer is doing and what Major League Soccer has achieved in really a short time. You know, it's still an infant when you compare it to the other sporting leagues. And they'll say, this is a growth industry, and this is one that we need to be a part of. And I think also that there's this great kind of welcome mat out there for American soccer, where people are still very happy to bring you inside their home and, you know, come under my umbrella when it's raining outside, and happy to make new fans. And I think there's a lot of curious people out there who still don't fully know what soccer is. And a lot of times I think they just associate it with the World Cup or the English Premier League. And then when they see it, that it's on their front porch or a drive or something close to them, they say, you know, maybe this is something I need to invest some time and money into.
I guess this is an unknowable question, but as someone who watches just a ton of soccer, international, domestic, professional, amateur, etc., would you say that this is a fair analogy? MLS is to EPL as SEC and Big Ten football are to the NFL in terms of like being that type of closeness on quality of play?
You know, I think the EPL at times is overvalued. And look, I like to watch it. I enjoy it. The tradition and the way that a majority of those games are played to me, I'll take it in. I'll spend some of my time doing it. But Major League Soccer, I think, has been dealt a bad hand by a lot of people, and they've refused to move on and accept that the style of play, that the quality of soccer has grown infinitely. And in a brief time, I'm talking over the last 5 years or so, you look at the product that was on the field to compare it to where it is now, you'll say this is a much better entertaining product. Still a lot of work to do. And I don't know if ever MLS will get to those levels. But, you know, I think they should start saying, hey, let's try to close the gap a little bit more with Italy or Germany. And then let's talk about taking on the big boys. But, you know, they still have enough work to do here at home domestically. But I think in the end, you know, when they have their year-end meetings, they're going to say, wow, look what just took place in Atlanta. Look at the growth that we have coming, the new teams coming into the league, the players that want to be here that are coming here at a younger and younger age. The fact that we have owners that are more and more willing to spend and bring in quality products. And we have these fan bases that more times than not are being created organically. And it's part of their culture. It's part of their lives. And it's now becoming kind of a generational thing where I'm seeing more and more of this passed down to younger and younger kids because mom and dad are the ones that followed this.
What cities that the MLS isn't in, I know we talked about how hard it is to forecast, but what cities that it's not in do you think could really bubble and explode and have huge organic fan bases?
I don't know because I'm thrown off by Atlanta still. You know, I just didn't expect this. I had no clue that this would come, and I'm far from alone in this. And then, you know, we have Nashville coming into the league and Cincinnati coming into the league. And years past, you would say, what are we doing? You know, why are you going there? So I think it's really hard to kind of circle a city. I've always been a fan, Ryan, of when it comes to expansion, you know, go after a big city, but also go after a mid-market city, a city that is starving to have an A-lister in their town. So, you know, sometimes I think that's why you see Oklahoma City's doing so well on the NBA front. They had nothing else out there outside of college athletics. You know, I think there's some markets like that, maybe a St. Louis coming back into play that could be awfully curious. You know, Florida has shown that, you know, Orlando is strong. What's going on with Miami? I still think Tampa St. Pete is a wonderful option out there. It has history. I think it's got the opportunity to do something. The Sacramentos that have long been talked about, the Indianapolises, where maybe there isn't this just too much. You know, I think you need to be able to look at your city and look at your sporting culture and say, look, we can fit in. There is a piece of the pie that fits for us. And I think you need to find those cities that are there. But I'll tell you also, I think we're pretty close to maxing out Major League Soccer-wise as far as what cities to expand to. You don't want to dilute the product too much, but you also want to give opportunities, you know, to these young American players.
Sticking with MLS, but also pivoting to the U.S. men's national team, U.S. is hiring MLS coach Greg Berhalter to be the coach of the team. What's your opinion on this choice?
My opinion is if we got this news, you know, 4 to 8 months ago, I'd be happy. I'm fine. It makes a sensible choice. He has pedigree. He's played for this team. He understands the college game. He understands the professional game here in the United States. He understands what's going on domestically as well. And to this day, I'm still completely fine with it. But the fact that it took this long from the greatest failure of American men's soccer to finally name a head coach, you know, now we're playing catch up. You know, we had an opportunity to get a jump start on so many other nations out there and getting prepared for the next World Cup cycle. And instead, we've actually somehow fallen behind because we've spent basically a good year in the wilderness, you know, led by some really brave people guiding a national team. But I think the national team is, it's been out of sight, out of mind, frankly, Ryan. And I don't think many people are talking about it. I don't think that many people care about it. And U.S. soccer's got a lot of work to do to win back that fan base, to win back the trust, and also to win back some optimism. I'm not overly optimistic that the next great generation of U.S. soccer players are out there. I've been promised this for so long. And frankly, the games that I've seen since we failed to qualify for the World Cup has given me very little hope for the immediate future, maybe long distance future, but the immediate future right now, I'm not overly excited about the state of U.S. soccer. And that's on the men's side. The women's side is a completely different story with the World Cup coming this upcoming summer in France on Fox.
As we look at the men's team, they do have some young talent. It's just that they haven't quite gelled together. So that might be a promising aspect. But if you look at it for the next 1 to 2 World Cup cycles, what level of result would be exceeding expectations? What are the expectations, and what would be, in your opinion, a failure?
Right. I think a lot of it depends on what the format is going to be for the next couple World Cups. You know, there's always this talk of expansion, and we know that's going to happen in 8 years. Is it going to happen in 4 years' time? We still don't know. But sadly, I think U.S. men's soccer right now is back to the point where getting out of the group stage is going to be considered a win. And we've been saying that for a good decade plus right now. And it should be quarterfinals. It should be semifinals. And in my mind, we're nowhere near that right now. And I've seen our youth teams have great levels of success, and I am optimistic, but how many times do we see, you know, little leaguers have great success? It doesn't transition to the major leagues, right? We see college kids playing basketball that we say, this guy is fantastic. And then you start going down a rabbit hole and say, where's Isaiah Whitehead right now? And you go, some country in Eastern Europe I've never heard of. And he was a guy that they're talking about being a first round pick. So I'm all about the youth in the future, but that is far from a guarantee in any sport.
I want to put you on the spot for a second. Who are the top 5 soccer players in the world right now ranked?
You know, I mean, I think there's always that debate between Ronaldo and Messi and what they're going to be.
Hi, honey. I'm doing an interview. Yeah.
My wife is here.
That's fine. You can start over the answer.
You start over the answer and we'll start. You know, talking about the best players in the world, you know, I think we're still talking about veterans right now. And it's this Messi-Ronaldo conversation that continues. And I think there's a long list of talented names out there that people want to push through. And, you know, obviously Neymar is in that mix as well. But nobody's pushed those two off the throne. And frankly, I'm not really sure anybody will until those two step aside. But the point being, you know, nobody in that conversation is American. You know, Christian Pulisic is the closest thing we have to a guy who is on the top 50 radar as far as world players are concerned. And that's great. That's a wonderful achievement. He's a fantastic talent. But, man, we've gotten to the point where it should be littered with American names. And instead, you know, we're still left with guys who are at least now with bigger clubs and better clubs, but they're not getting the minutes and they're not playing and they're not producing. And that's not good enough for us to have success.
This is another kind of random question, but you watch all of this international soccer and domestic soccer. Can you run through all of your cable and streaming subscriptions that are required for you to keep up with this for your fanhood and your job?
You know, we're battling our cable provider right now. We are literally TV-less for the last 24 hours. It's great. I get to reconnect with my family. But my wife said at one point, she's like, we should go cordless. And I'm like, you know what pays my salary, right? You know what keeps the roof over our head? It's these damn cords. I love these cords. It's this weird traffic pattern of hunting down where games are and where you can find them and on what days. And I do it pretty lean and pretty mean, but I have my ways to track down these games. But I'm pulled in so many different directions, Ryan, between college football and hoops and now bowling. And, you know, I got to watch my SmackDown and my Raw as well. So, but I think it goes to a bigger point, Ryan, is that there's just so much soccer out there now, and there's this appetite, there's this thirst for it. And I give these governing bodies a lot of credit because they've found a way to spread out the week. You know, I remember when I was covering EPL, you know, I was saying we have so many games that we're not televising. Why can't they find these Thursday or Friday pockets or a big Monday night game like a Monday night football? I said the same thing when we had Champions League. You know, we have so many great games that are buried. Why not have a two-tier system where you have two sets of windows on Tuesday and on Wednesday? How great would that be to just sit there and bunker down and you've got your games? And yes, they're doing that right now. So it's amazing because I remember when Fox Soccer went away, and that's why I was hired, everybody freaked out in the soccer world because they said, you guys are taking away my safety blanket. You know, at a minimum, I knew I could always go to channel, you know, 125 or whatever it was, and there would be soccer on, and I'd be in a happy place, and I'd be warm and cuddly. Well, Fox Soccer is gone, but I think there's more soccer on our network and more soccer out there available than there's ever been before.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at what they've got on ESPN Plus, what they've got on BR Live, and what they've got on the NBC streaming platform, look, if you get all those and you're buying all the sports channels on cable, it's not going to be cheap, but there is at least like the possibility that any game you want, you should be able to find it now.
And that clearly was not the case back when I was watching Soccer Made in Germany on Connecticut Public Television.
No. You mentioned bowling. That's coming to Fox. You did the Professional Bowling Association on ESPN in a past life. What are you looking forward to picking that back up?
Yeah, we actually tape our first event this Monday down in Lake Wales, Florida, just south of Orlando. So 2 days after MLS Cup, I'll be back doing my bowling. And it was like an arranged marriage at first between me and bowling, and I somewhat fought it, but I also went in with a real open mind that I'm never going to let this freak me out and stress me out. And when I hit a point where I feel I'm prepared enough and I'm tired, I'm going to bed and I'll get up and I'll do my work. And somehow this arranged marriage between me and bowling has worked out spectacularly. I got kids, I got grandkids, I've grown to love the sport and enjoyed my place in it. Fox is thrilled to have it back. Live programming is king in television these days, and we're going to do a ton of live bowling. And look, ESPN was really good to it for a long, long time, but I think near the end, it was that girlfriend you just kind of took for granted and you never put the ring on her finger. And Fox has stepped up and said, baby, you're beautiful. I love you. I love spending time with you. Here's a ring. Let's spend our lives together. And they're dropping some money on it. They're showing it some TLC. They wake up every morning telling him you're a beautiful unicorn. And I can't believe you're in my life. So I think good and better things are ahead for the PBA with their marriage with Fox now.
You know, 20 years ago, people were like, oh, bowling's on the decline in terms of person participation perspective, like of the general population. But bowling alleys, at least when I pass them or go to them on weekends, they're
packed.
Just slammed now.
They're it's packed. Crazy. I rolled into one just before my kids went back to school in August. And I was like, this is good. We'll do a little family outing on a random Tuesday night or a Monday night. I can't remember what it was. And I pulled in. I was like, uh-oh. Oh, this isn't looking good. Maybe they're here for the other places. And we open up the door and every lane was packed. And I walk in and I'm like, a lane, you know, or two lanes for six. And they're like, hour and a half wait. And that's what happened.
And it's like $100 an hour for a lane.
Yeah, it's not cheap, but it's enjoyable. They've caught up with the times. And But that's just recreational bowling. You know, that's get out and have some pizza and some wings and some nachos and some beers and hang out with your friends and throw the ball really hard at some pins and hear them crack and smash. And that's all fine and dandy. But these are professional athletes and this is their living. And these guys are next level, man. When they get out there and they whip that rock down the hardwood and it's smashing into those pins, you immediately go, whoa, that's a different game going on right now. That's not me and my five buddies asking for another PBR pitcher. You know, this is different level.
As we also mentioned, you do college football. You were in the studio for Ohio State Northwestern. They've got to do something about it where these games, some of them don't have any stakes. I really think they need an 8-team playoff. What's your thoughts based on
100%, 100%. I've been asking for playoff for years. And I still think the conference games are great and they do serve some value. But you're right. You know, the Pac-12 championship game this year, you know, it really didn't serve a great purpose. There was nothing on the line. The Big Ten, you could make arguments that, hey, if chaos happened, ACC was basically, is Clemson going to get through clean? You know, Big 12, is Oklahoma going to get through clean? They still serve a purpose. You know, it's something that the committee and the athletic directors still value. But to your point, I agree. You know, we've been teased with this four for long enough. And I think we all can say every year we could have made a great case that there should have been a fifth or a sixth team involved. And why not just make it eight? And in the end, what I really hope happens is that it does expand, not a huge expansion, you know, 6 to 8 tops, but I want to see games on campus. I think that's the biggest thing that's missing, because the greatest part about college football is the atmosphere, is the day of, is getting to that stadium and tailgating and hanging out with your friends and doing these things. And they've gotten away from it. You know, it's become, you know, like they've done the Lysol wipes on everything. You get in and it's just, you know, it's just too clean. It's not what you want. So I want to see a team earn the right to have a home game, a knockout stage elimination game for the college football playoffs. I mean, can you imagine, you know, going to the Horseshoe or any other great campus stadium around the nation and knowing that this game is for your team to move on or the season ends right there? The atmosphere that would be created, the hype that would be out there, the money that could be made out there is off the charts in my eyes.
Right. It's crazy to me when people say that an 8-team playoff would devalue the regular season. But like, do you think that these teams don't want to fill their stadium for that quarterfinal round, like have the local economy, tens of millions of dollars poured in, give their fans a chance to like host that type of spectacle?
100%. That wave is coming, Ryan. That wave is coming. And I think it's getting stronger and stronger every year, you know, and the fact that the Big Ten champion for the third straight year is not into the college football playoffs, that's going to pee off. You know, that's going to upset a lot of folks right now. The Pac-12 has been in decline. They need to find a way to get themselves in the mix to say, hey, guys, we still can be one of the elite conferences out there. I think there's this groundswell of emotion and energy where people are saying, let's expand. We can do this. And again, look how long this layoff is from last Saturday to when the college national semifinals are going to be. It's too long. It's far too long. And everybody would agree. You know, they're going to say, oh, we're playing over the holidays. Look, college soccer, NCAA doesn't care. NCAA, you know, makes the college soccer playoffs fight right through the holidays and Thanksgiving on no notice. And then they'll say, people are saying it costs so much to go travel to these games. Of course it does, because you're sticking them at some neutral site and you're finding out, you know, just a couple weeks ahead of time where your team is playing. If these games are on campus, you're not having that problem. You don't have that problem in the NFL where you know you've earned the right to host a playoff game so your fan base can just drive in and do what it normally does every Sunday.
That being said, how could you keep a straight face when Dave Wansett said that Notre Dame shouldn't be in the playoff when they're undefeated?
It's, you know, I love Coach. B, there is some points to it. And I think a lot of people are caught up, as I was too, about the fact that they're not in a conference and they basically got a bye week. Because look, if Notre Dame lost in a conference championship game on Championship Saturday, I don't think they would be in the playoffs right now. And that bothers a lot of people. So I think at some point they need to be punished and penalized for that, or they need to be coerced enough to say, guys, step up and play by the same rules that everybody else is playing in. I think that's what upsets so many people, is that there's this concept that Notre Dame is above the fray and that they can do what they want and call their shots. I have great respect for what they've done, undefeated season with a challenging schedule and a lot of quality wins out there. And going undefeated should always be rewarded. But the fact that they're not in a conference, the fact that they're not dealing with these conference emotional type games week in, week out, and they don't have a conference championship game to play in, I think to some level there needs to be a penalty put in. And I think in a lot of people's eyes, Ryan, they'll say they were penalized. They were dropped from 3 down to 4, and they get Alabama.
Transitioning to our mutual love of pro wrestling, how phenomenal has this Becky Lynch run been since SummerSlam?
It's been enjoyable. You know, the thing about wrestling is you're always afraid to take a week off because you don't know when that next moment is going to hit. You know, you don't know when CM Punk is going to go off. And you don't know when Becky Lynch is going to become this phenomenon that she is. You don't know when John Cena is going to return. You don't know when you're going to hear the Rock's music play out of nowhere for no particular reason. You don't know when that next rivalry is going to take place. You don't know when that next idiot is going to get himself fired from the roster, too. But it's fun, and that's why we keep coming back. And I've described it for years as my soap opera, and that's what it is. It's my guiding light. And I need to be there, and I need to follow what's going on. I may fast forward through a couple segments here and there, but it's got me hooked for life, and it's got me hooked even more now that it's coming to Fox in the very near future. And I think it'll be really interesting to see what the brands of Raw and the brands of SmackDown look like and how they are integrated or not integrated once Fox takes over the SmackDown.
I don't know. I've gone back and forth about whether they should combine them back together or keep them distinct. The argument for combining them together is that way nobody feels cheated. Nobody's like USA isn't, oh, why does Fox have Becky Lynch when we're stuck with X and vice versa? But keeping them distinct means that they don't have to go overboard promoting rival networks. So it's like an interesting dilemma for them.
Yeah, I don't know what the solution is because they all want their A-listers, right? They all want the people that move the needle. And, you know, Becky Lynch was not a needle mover, right, until about a month and change ago. So now she is, and now you're saying, well, we have her, but, you know, we want her. And I don't know how they're going to sort it out. Plus, they have so many talents on that roster that if they're all together, so many are going to get buried as well. Plus, for me, as you see by my resume, I love the fact that there's always something new coming down my road. So when college football is beating me up, I get excited that College Hoops is right here. And I kind of like, I'm kind of a Raw guy, right? I'm an old school Raw guy. I don't do a whole lot of SmackDown, but I do a lot of Raw. So I kind of like the fact that the whole SmackDown cast has been away from me for a while. And when they come back into my face, I get excited. I mean, I'm like, hey, there's Sheamus. What's been going on? Cesaro, how are you? Good to see you. Tell me, what have you been doing with yourself? So those simple things that, you know, keep it fresh and keep me hooked. And obviously, I can't be alone in that.
That's true. And the pay-per-views combine them now. I don't know. I kind of liked it when there were Raw and SmackDown only pay-per-views because they weren't as long. And now they're
the hype too, proud. Right? Seeing like, hey, here's a rivalry that we are creating and forcing upon you. And even though they have no real interaction. So I think that's something they need to sort out.
You're definitely right that like with the depth they have now, and they're just building more and more depth. Like I've started to go to indie shows and WWE keeps like plucking those performers off. Right and left for NXT, and then they go through the pipeline. Like NXT has more people than they have airtime to give people. 100%. I would love NXT to be on FS1. I know, like, there's a million different programming decisions that have to go into what they do, but it just seems like a no-brainer to replace the spot that the Ultimate Fighter is leaving
right.
And put NXT on.
Well, you know, look, this is you know, in essence, this is really the first time that professional wrestling, sports entertainment, has made its way into kind of the sports network landscape. And, you know, Fox had long conversations about how to balance this. When FS1 first launched, you know, they thought very long and hard about bringing in NXT and making that part of their programming. And in the end, they said, we're a sports network. You know, we can't do this. But this is the first time that Fox Sports is clearly dipping its toes into sports entertainment. And I think, you know, they're excited about it. It's a bold initiative, but I think there's also a little wait and see. Hey, let's let this play out. And again, it is on Fox, so it's a little bit buffered away, but there is some programming on FS1 that will take part around it. I don't know exactly what that is yet. So I think it's going to be a little bit more of a wait and see, like, hey, let's give this 6 to 12 months. Let's see how our audience responds to it. And in the end, you know, if you're getting ratings, you start saying, okay, let's do more. Let's look to see how we can add more and more of this to our programming grids.
As is tradition, is there anything that I didn't ask you about soccer, college football, WWE, broadcasting, et cetera, that you vigorously want to discuss right
vigorously
now?
Vigorously want to discuss. I would love to talk about your thoughts on Colgate at North Dakota State in FCS quarterfinal action, but frankly, I don't have much to add to that outside of Colgate playing. I think here's a couple things I think. I think college basketball is making a stronger push than in years past to become more and more relevant earlier in the season. I'm a longtime college hoops guy, and I get so annoyed that only people seem to pay attention come March. And with the schedule that so many networks and these campuses have been able to put together, I think some talents and some teams and some programs have gotten in the face of a lot of people in the Novembers and Decembers months earlier than in years past. So I think college hoops is on a major upswing right now, and I'm all in favor of that. I think MLS, the big talking point this weekend at MLS Cup is going to be this attendance and what that gaudy 70,000+ numbers that are going to be there on a Saturday night, absolutely, you know, kicking the fire marshal out and shattering records is going to be a major talking point going forward. I'm thrilled that Greg Berhalter is in charge of the U.S. men's national team, but man, he's got a lot of work to do. I think a lot of people are cheering for him, but he's got to change that culture back to where it was and find some great talent. So I think it's a real interesting year to come in soccer, particularly with the defending women's World Cup champs in action this summer in France. Can't wait to get to Paris.
Yeah, response real quick on what you said about college basketball. We're definitely noticing that too. Duke with those three incredible players. I know they don't play in anything that you cover directly, but they're lifting the tide of the sport. There's a ton of interest in Zion Williamson and like his freaky body and his athleticism. I agree with you that these like those – we're just coming off of those Thanksgiving tournaments that are a ton of fun. We see all these types of matchups we're not used to seeing. Your team is on every day if they keep winning. December, though, is the month that they need to fix in college basketball. Yep. Because Wisconsin had like 5 real games in the last 10 days. And then in the month of December, they have one interesting matchup the whole month. I know part of that is the finals and the holidays and some of the things that make college football hibernate for the month. Sure. But they do a big disservice to themselves getting that big momentum over Thanksgiving and then having a bunch of cupcake games.
So, Ryan, I'll leave you and your listeners with the homework project. Ready? Go and research the college basketball slate of games on Fox last Saturday and what's coming your way this Saturday. And then talk to me because we're in December and there are some awesome games coming your way.
I was looking at it from a very selfish one.
Of course you were. That's what we do.
Thank you very much, Rob. Rob Stone, catch him on the MLS Cup 7:30 Eastern on Fox. We will talk to you again in the coming months. Great luck with everything.
Can't wait for my 6th appearance. See you, buddy.
Familiar. judge turned stranger. Will you notice if I don't notice you? Familiar touch turned stranger.